As Deborah shared, we are celebrating Anabaptist World Fellowship Sunday today, which was established by Mennonite World Conference, an international body of Mennonite and Brethren churches that totals a membership of about 1.4 million people. Anabaptist Fellowship Sunday celebrates the moment the movement first began by celebrating on the Sunday closest to the day that marks the anniversary of the beginning of our movement. On January 21st, 1525, a group of Christians gathered in their home for the first time in Zurich, Switzerland. They were original followers of the reformer Jörg Zwingli, but they grew more and more frustrated with his stance on infant baptism. Keep in mind, though, that infant baptism at the time had a political tie to it, that you couldn't be citizens in much of Europe without also being part of an established church, whatever the state endorsed. These Anabaptists who were gathering didn't feel comfortable with the lack of consent the person had in being baptized. So they began to baptize each other in open defiance of the theological norm. George Balrock was the first person within the Anabaptist movement to be baptized, and he was baptized by Conrad Grebel, a key figure in the Swiss Brethren movement that would later on spark this. This is why they were called Anabaptist, Anna meaning again. So in the eyes of the rest of the church, they were rebaptizing, which is a denial of the original baptism, they felt, and it was seen at that time as a very serious heresy. Soon after that, Menno Simons, the figure that influenced the Mennonites directly, hence Mennonites, soon helped to give shape to the fractured movement in response to his own disappointment with the Reformation. Thus, over the next 500 years or so, the movement would grow in different directions, as well as facing immense persecution. Among the key characteristics of this way of faith is an emphasis on living as Christ did, and putting an emphasis on Christ-like living along with belief. Other core doctrines such as community, separation of church and state, nonviolence, simplicity, and service developed as the movement grew. Various denominations started growing as well globally. Our denomination, Mennonite Church USA, is fairly new in the longer scheme of Anabaptism. It was an eventual merger, but was the General Conference and the Mennonite Church. Mission and human, and that was founded about 25 years ago-ish. I converted. Anyway, so mission and human rights organizations also soon started to be founded as well, with Mennonite Central Committee and the organization I worked with, Community Peacemaker Teams, which was formerly Christian Peacemaker Teams, being founded in response to global crises at different periods in history. In 2017, Community Peacemaker Teams was actually nominated for Nobel Prize, Peace One. We didn't win, but we didn't take it as hard as some other people do. But okay. As many of you know, I'm a fairly new convert to Anabaptism. My growth really started when I was actually at an evangelical Bible college with a Quaker emphasis. And I was very uncomfortable with the evangelical aspect of it. Not even necessarily the beliefs at the time, but the posture of power and nationalist identities that I saw on my peers. I eventually read a lot of the founding Quaker documents, and I was dismayed to find out that the vision the founder George Fox had wasn't matching the reality I was seeing. But then I went on a delegation with Community Peacemaker Teams. I saw this vision being acted among a group called the Mennonites. I soon was drawn in. I even started studying Anabaptist studies at Northern Seminary once I finished my master's. I became what is known as a neo-Anabaptist, or if you go back even further than that, some folks will call them the hyphenated Anabaptists. Those are folks who are identifying with different Christian traditions but still pull a lot from the Anabaptist tradition. So I learned under folks who were actually major figures in the movement. But I was also quickly dismayed at how much they tended to write off traditional Anabaptism and other Mennonite denominations. And they were great scholars, but everything had to be reoriented and rewritten to fit their context. Which is why I certainly agree there's a lot of growth that needs to happen within the Mennonite world. And to a lot of those scholars, I wonder if they realize we are very critical of ourselves. It reminds me of that joke in geek culture that no one hates Star Wars more than Star Wars fans. You know, we recognize we need that growth. But we recognize we need to grow as a family. And I don't believe we are perfect at all. But I have to tell you, I'm still in my honeymoon phase, and I've been 4.5 years into this denomination. It doesn't mean that we don't have challenges to face as a global movement, but it does bring us to today's text of the Compassionate Samaritan. So back when I was, I know I mentioned I came from a Quaker background earlier, but I also have Jewish roots. If you're confused, so is everyone else. But back when I was more open about my Jewish roots growing up, I would receive a lot of bizarre comments from well-intentioned Christians. From talking about the state of Israel unprovoked over a cup of coffee, to asking me what all Jews think about the Old Testament. I've had to be in the awkward hot seat plenty of times without asking for it. One of the last straws for me was when I was talking to an evangelical pastor who was talking about how many Jews didn't think Jesus is the Messiah. He then shifted towards me very comfortably, smiled, and said, "Thank God you're one of the good ones." So I mention that story because we've commonly heard this passage described as the parable of the Good Samaritan. But it's part of our Christian calling to undo pressures within ourselves and within broader contexts. We need to remember that Samaritans are a living people group with their own customs and beliefs. The New Testament scholar and practicing Orthodox Jew, M.E. Jill Levine, writes in her commentary called Short Stories by Jesus that to get an initial hint of the distance between the mindset of the parable's original audience and our own 21st century perspectives, we might begin by reflecting briefly on the term Good Samaritan. Today we use the term as if it were not peculiar. Yet, as far as I'm aware, there are no good Catholic or good Baptist hospitals. There are no social service organizations called Good Episcopalian, or Good Mexican, or Good Arab. To label the Samaritan, any Samaritan, a Good Samaritan, should be in today's climate seen as offensive. It is tantamount to saying he's a good Muslim, or she's a good immigrant. It is also a lack of awareness of how odd the expression Good Samaritan would have seemed to the followers of Jesus. So who are the Samaritans? They're an ethno-religious group formed around Palestine. Some estimates I've read there's about 750 to 1,000 of them in their communities. They're intertwined with Judaism, but they've become their own stream, and they believe they are practicing the true religion as found in their version of the Torah. So here are some of the key distinctives. They follow the Samaritan Pentateuch, which is their own version of the Torah. I'm not sure if they call it the Pentateuch, but they recognize Mount Gerizim, near Nablus, not Jerusalem, as the holiest place chosen by God. They do not accept later Jewish scriptures like the prophets or writings. Their religious leadership is headed by a high priest, which is continuing an ancient priestly lineage. And they also consider lineage patriarchal, meaning believe as long as your father was a Samaritan, then you too are a Samaritan. This is in contrast to a lot of traditional Jewish understandings of if your mother is Jewish, then you are Jewish. So during the Assyrian conquest of the Kingdom of Israel, they were the group that stayed behind. So they developed into their own faith and their own culture separately, in a sense, from the mainstream. In Jesus' world, the Samaritans were perceived often as enemies because they were seen as people who betrayed a deep orthodoxy and culture. Jesus pointing to that group and saying they were more faithful is a shock to the system for many of the folks there wanting to find out what it meant to be righteous. It is not the person who has the right values or the right ideas that has it right in the end. It is rather the person who showed compassion and solidarity. As a global Anabaptist community, we tend to go against one another in theological debates. One of the most overarching issues right now, namely being centered on sexuality. These are important issues to discuss, but I've often wondered how many times we accidentally dehumanize each other for having a different perspective without having a context for where the other person is coming from. And how many personally have I personally done that too without leaving space for the Holy Spirit to work in someone's life? And how many times have I disagreed with how fast or how different the Holy Spirit is working in that person's life? During this tense political season, I find myself feeling often angry, righteously so, at the state of the world. When I heard about the killing of Alex Paretti by ICE agents, I was absolutely furious and heartbroken. Then I made the very bad decision of going on my social media. And I saw peers I studied the Bible alongside defending ICE. How could we sit in the same classroom reading the same Bible and come to such different conclusions? Then I asked myself another question. When was the last time I invited them to a conversation with me or invited them to coffee? I realized I was cursing the night while having all the access to the candles. I took a step back even further and realized their contacts. Many of them are in rural areas struggling. And their main source of information is from whatever the conservative or traditional Christian radio station there is saying. To cut through all the noise of the world, I have a subscription to a service called Ground News. They did not endorse this sermon. But it analyzes all the different political news sites when a story is shared. If it feels like there are different versions of reality happening and butting against each other, it's because of the way these outlets frame the stories. The way the news is being presented, depending on your political persuasion, is absolutely biased and shows one side of the picture often. So how does this apply to us as Mennonites and Anabaptists? There is both internal work we need to do with each other, as well as external work. We need to learn and grapple that many Anabaptists are coming from more traditional backgrounds and are contrast with our more progressive expression. We need to do this in a healthy way and recognize that the Holy Spirit is at work on both ends of the spectrum, mysteriously. I think of the differences even in different countries and continents. There are many Anabaptist communities in Latin America and Africa that present themselves as more charismatic and Pentecostal in their worship. Are they doing our faith wrong? Or are we willing to learn from their perspective, then glean what the good is there from it? If they are living the way of compassion and service, then what right do we have to say how they are doing things wrong? I want to do a quick show of hands. How many of us came to LMC from a non-Anabaptist background? How many of us came here from a Mennonite background? Beautiful. So this congregation is actually very unique in that people are drawn to us because of this Mennonite expression. Yet as you looked around the room, roughly a third to half of us don't come from a Mennonite background. Some of us still identify as evangelical. Some of us identify as ex-evangelical. Others come from Anglican or Catholic backgrounds. Others from Reformed backgrounds. Others come from different religious traditions or no church backgrounds. We are all coming in with our definitions of words and theological terms. This presents a challenge, but also a unique opportunity to get to know one another in community. And frankly, we can learn how to benefit from how other streams of faith practice and celebrate God. I still, for instance, carry Quaker spirituality with me, even though I identify as a Mennonite. The question doesn't become how can Mennonites maintain our culture with all these shifts, but how can we grow in different and exciting ways with all these backgrounds coming together while still being rooted in the Anabaptist way. Externally, as far as I work outside the church, this application has been said many times in Sunday schools and sermons. We as Mennonites need to be the sharp contrast to Christian nationalism. Whether that's through protest or through charity or through engaging with those who identify as nationalists, we have a radical alternative to what is mainstream right now. We are living in a strange era where things like compassion, empathy, are seen as sinful. We need to boldly proclaim that there is another way, and that the current political climate isn't reflective of the resurrected Christ we know and follow. So thus, when we see someone lying in a ditch, needing to be healed and rescued, our first instinct shouldn't be to ask whether or not they are worthy. It's rather to show compassion and solidarity. And in that compassion, God shows us the next steps. It is always safe to do right. I'm going to end with a very mixed, messy story, but I want you all to reflect on it. And there's no set right answer. It's something for you to think about. About 5 years ago, I was serving a church in the middle of nowhere, Wisconsin. It was a town of 35 people. There was a snowstorm, but I had to work anyway at my second job because, again, I was living in a town of 35 people. And as I was driving, my car drifted off into a bank, and I couldn't get out. Several cars drove by and didn't stop for one reason or another, and my cell phone had no bars or no data because the area we lived in, the iron or something, blocked out signals, something sciencey. But a person did stop. He asked me if he could help. He just so happened to have a tow in the bed of his truck. But then I looked at the words painted on the side of it, and it was a really bad joke. It read, "Black trucks matter." I was in quite the dilemma. It was snowing and it was falling fast, so I hesitantly agreed and he pulled me out. He had me sit in his cab while he pulled the car out, and then I noticed the cross hanging on his rearview mirror. A part of me realized that perhaps by denying this man's help, I would be denying the work of God in him that was still growing, despite the incredibly uncomfortable joke on the side of his truck. So here's a question I leave you all with. Would it have been better for me to remain in the snow ditch, even though I had access out? Or was it better to trust that God was at work in his life too, and to see his humanity? What would you have done if you were in the ditch?